You're listening to Heroine. Heroine is a podcast that aims at amplifying the voices of women making Europe. They will tell you about their background, their challenges, their success, and maybe share some advice. On this podcast, we want to uncover the reality of women in Brussels, a very peculiar power sphere.
Hello, welcome back on Heroine. We are very sorry for being a bit absent lately, but June has been a very intense period for both of us. But we're back with a new episode and we hope you will enjoy it. Today we are talking with Sadia Mir. Sadia is an academic and a policy analyst in the UN Report Network. We will talk about gender diversity in policy debate because she's also part of the Brussels Binder. And we will also talk about very different topics such as women in the conflict zone, women in climate change, women in tech, or women on the internet. We hope you will enjoy this episode.
So hi, Sadia.
Thanks for being here today with us. It's a real pleasure to meet you. And we are looking forward to learning more about you and what you're doing. You are really involved in women's rights. You're working with the UN Women's UN Report Network, and you're also part of the Brussels Binder. So to start this interview, we want to know more about who you are and where you grew up.
Well, hi. Firstly, thank you for inviting me to this podcast, and thank you for this initiative. I think it's a great initiative. To learn more about women in the EU bubble, so to speak. So I was brought up in Beirut, in the war zones, and then we moved to London. And from that remote place, the EU was not really something that we discussed at home as such. We discussed, you know, where we would get evacuated, whether I would be going to Syria, whether I'd have school, why certain kids were not returning back to school, those issues. And it was more towards my journey when I was studying and working and learning about climate change many decades ago that brought me to the EU bubble in terms of the policies and how they would work on climate change, which was fairly unknown subject at the time.
That's great. And how did you arrive in this job position? What was your journey to the position you're in today? And can you maybe walk us through how you've arrived here?
So I came as on a small internship to Brussels, and subsequently I did a master's in climate policy, which I was working very closely with some of the MEPs here, people like Jean Lambert, who contributed to parts of the research. And so that was one aspect of my journey. And I then was working through on policy. And so WANRON, which is Women's UN Report Network, wanted to also explore aspects of Brussels and working in multilateral platform, which Brussels is. And so we started to work on expand the policy regions here.
That's great. And after this little internship, as you called it, continue?
So after the internship, as I said, I went back and did a master's, and subsequently, you know, I was writing and working and researching on climate change all the time. And also as an academic, I was teaching in London and working on preparing a module that I was going to deliver back and forth from Brussels and London.
Maybe you can explain what you're doing now exactly in your job and what you're working on.
We look at gender rights quite cross-sectoral, and we look at intergenerational life cycles of women and where they're affected our aim in Brussels is perhaps to extend that advocacy between the EU and the UN to carry that forward. So when we were working on the agenda of violence against women very closely with some of the MEPs in the European Parliament, and then we started to carry that forward to work with the UN working groups, especially the mandate on violence against women. And so took that initiative and put that initiative together with the European Parliament. And can we cross that and start again? So, we worked very closely, say, with the office of Julie Ward, who was a very prominent MEP for quite some time, as well as a couple of others. And then we decided that we would carry this initiative towards the UN working groups, especially the group on violence against women. And so we were at that, making that transition. I'm sure that the EU does its own work within the UN, but this was on policy and gender and advocacy. So we highlighted a couple of issues which were really important at the time and which are now coming to a forefront, which were online violence against women, which we saw an increase in the pandemic. And, I had said, as I said, I teach energy, environment, technology, and economics, and I'm very careful because I would like to see tech remain open towards women as much as possible. So we see a decrease in that, in the sense that many young women, if you look at the Plan International report, are ceasing to use the internet because they have been subject to online harassment.
And how come, how do you explain that decrease? And is it just in tech or is it in general in the STEM field?
I think over the years there has been, and there were two more reports, one especially by the EU that alluded that there was a marked decrease despite initiatives to see women in the tech sector. I think part of it is lack of investment in general in women and tech and digital, but definitely, part of the issues are overcoming. I mean, just to be online doesn't mean that you are active online, you know what I mean, or that you have all the tools to engage with online platforms. So, which is why I find your initiative very interesting.
Thank you.
Like, how do you see the world evolving in that respect, and how do you see women in those conflict areas? Because we know, in the COVID crisis, another dimension, of course, but we saw that women's rights are the first one usually to fall. Mm. What's your take on it, and do you agree with that impression?
So I think conflict is a really interesting scenario in a sense, because as I said, I went to school with children who never returned, and it leaves quite a it leaves an impact on you for sure. And there are many regions in the world that are still kind of facing conflict, unresolved conflicts, and women in conflict are very resilient. For sure, they're the ones who keep their doors open. I recall in Beirut, you might have had opposing views with people, but at the end of the day, you could walk in anyone's house for water. And that sort of stays with me. But, there is a whole scenario of issues that women face if it's facing the paramilitary or military, if it's being used as weapons, in one sense or the other, or being abused. So I think with the onset of climate change, we've got so little time, and in a sense, and to fight each other, it's quite it defeats the object in a sense, because we are in a bigger fight at the moment, I think, and you'd not be clued on to say otherwise. And I think the UN ambassador, Antonio Guterres, said during COVID, let's not have a pandemic. You know, during this pandemic, let's not increase any kind of conflict. And that gave the Earth some breathing space, which is very much needed.
And you were, just before we started the podcast, we talked about women online and how to protect them. I think that's what you do in your daily job as well. Maybe you can explain to us what's the point of view of your association on that organization, on that topic, and how do you personally engage on that topic?
So online is a new frontier, and it remains so because online is, it's what connects us all. I think someone said if Facebook was a country, it would be one of the biggest countries. So I think the internet needs to remain open for women, because it's a digitalized piece of our democracy in a sense. And if our voices aren't there, and if our content isn't there, and if we're not able to participate, then it's, we're moving, we're not represented. And people talk about literacy and how women are behind in literacy. Well, I think the next level is the internet then. So globally, not just in Europe, women need to benefit from being online in the best way possible, and to really be there without worrying or fearing what's going to happen in terms of when they are online. And there should be measures to protect them. What they are at the moment, we don't know, but we do definitely need to start talking about putting together cohesive laws to bring internet safety for the majority of users. Perhaps the UN rapporteur said to have the Istanbul Convention and various treaties that are used as violence online, offline, to extend them to violence online as well. But we see that the Istanbul Convention is now in a declining position as far as women are concerned in certain states. So that's already a worry.
And it's interesting that you mentioned the Istanbul Convention.
Yeah.
As you know, it's a global convention. It's not only the EU, and it's one of the things the EU is trying to do also at a global level. You work at a global level and not only the EU. So how do you see these types of texts? Do you think the future is more global and less EU, so that we can export our values and what we believe should be the way of life? Or do you think, your point of view on this would be very interesting, Sadia.
So I think I think COVID has thrown some curveballs towards all of us. And I think one thing we can take away from COVID is that we should definitely work together more globally. But how does that happen? Because you have so many more countries kind of breaking off and becoming very, working in very isolated measures. So we have Brexit as a clear indicator of that, working in almost an isolated unilateral sense rather than a multilateral approach. So I think obviously if you have a treaty that is protected, say like you have the CEDAW Committee on Women that has national action plans, then you can definitely mold those to extend to those countries who are co-signatories. How do you get everybody on board? That's quite a challenge, But there is definitely a backlash against gender rights as well in certain regions, which is quite worrying.
What regions do you have in mind? Like, what countries do you have in mind, and what kind of backlash?
So, obviously Turkey is now in that situation where they're not ratifying the Istanbul Convention, but also some European countries. We have Poland, we have Hungary, and I'm not the only one who's sort of flagged that up. It's common knowledge. So how would you get those countries back on board? You know, I think that's a big response. I think that's a big project for Europe in itself. Why are they falling off the scale? To me, Europe as a peace project is an amazing kind of project. I don't know if everyone sees it like that. Certainly, a lot of the people who wanted to vote Brexit didn't. So.
And maybe since you're working in the EU bubble as well, what do you think the EU should improve in its policy on gender equality?
A lot. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done. The EU has, the Parliament has slightly more power now than it used to, for sure. And the Parliament as a democracy works very well. But, you know, if you look at the Femme Committee as opposed to the other committees, I'm not sure. I mean, does it have the same kind of budget? Does it have the same kind of input, say, as the Foreign Affairs Committee? How do you streamline gender issues into the rest of the policy areas? Because it's quite a challenge. But perhaps if we started seeing things, we started seeing policies in terms of gender, we would have less of the problems that we're having. So we would have less poverty-ized areas or feminized poverty-ized areas. So looking at less poverty, it had things kind of started to be streamlined initially, we would have had, you know, less of an impact on women than we did during COVID. I think streamlining policies with a gender kind of tag, it's important because we don't want to lose already what we've worked for in that sense. And I think perhaps there is a danger of going to in that direction as we see.
That's very, very interesting, very insightful.
Maybe now we can talk a little bit about your other organization, I would say, the Brussels Bider. So you've been involved in it. So can you tell us more about this organization? What's the goal of it?
So Brussels Bider, I think, is a great initiative. I came across it during our work on gender, and they asked, happy to, you know, support, and I am. And you know, it's a non-profit organization, and it has an outreach of quite a sizable network, so its role is obviously to see more women, but it also provides a toolkit and for women to register at the Binder. So that, you know, when people are looking for women experts, they're not sure, they're not short of women in these, in the Binder. And I think I am part of the partnerships team, so fundraising partnerships. So looking at different types of partners, which are like the think tanks, like-minded organizations, which ours is. And I think the Binder relies on public and engagement, especially from women, and it's made its mark in Brussels. I think it's a reference point for people if they want to reach for a woman expert, which is great. And I think perhaps the Binder and could be replicated in other capitals, which are needed, you know, to put a database of women. They're very well organized, and it's a great initiative. I've certainly worked quite a few cities, and I don't, you know, there are little networks of women who have either think tank capacity or policy capacity, but definitely not something that's so cross-sectoral and such a big, database, which is very encouraging. perhaps more people need to learn that there's all these women experts on these databases. How then can you not find a woman expert for your role or for something that you have, you know, for instance, for a panel that you're doing, it's virtually impossible, you know. So I think definitely different cities need to have a replica of the binder. Maybe they should launch it globally.
I've heard that actually the expression Brussels binder came from Mitt Romney, who said in 2012 in the presidential election in the US, he said, bring me a binder full of women, so that he could actually have some speakers because they couldn't find any women and he wanted it to be somewhat equal. And I feel like that's something that every organization in Brussels still faces. And nowadays we're seeing this trend where actually males are asked to not participate in panels that would be only male, and really to take a male participation in equality issues. And I think that's really a game changer.
Yeah.
In our fight for more feminism and equality, what do you think about this trend? Do you have the same impression as us that male are taking part of the conversation more and more?
I see that definitely there's a lack of women experts, especially those from a diverse background. I'll be really honest with you. I mean, if I was invited somewhere to speak about economics, I would think, you know, I'd have to really up my game, and I teach the subject. I see people who go on to panels quite happily talking about subjects they're not really familiar with, and perhaps have some knowledge of, but they're not really the experts. So I find that really interesting concept that someone can do that, really, in all honesty. It's, you know... It's quite mind-boggling, and definitely I don't want to generalize, but some men don't seem to have any qualms about standing there and talking about a subject rather than referring someone who perhaps would know more about it, but perhaps is less known, you know. that's my takeaway from it. But definitely, you're right, that's how the name came about, and I think as our organization, more organizations to perhaps list on it, assist it, be part of it, do something voluntary with it, because it's really a sign of solidarity, and I think it's really a fantastic initiative, for sure.
Okay, and if an expert in the field, in any field, wants to join the binder, they just very concretely go on the website and fill a form, right? Is that how it works?
Yes, I think it's quite straightforward. I haven't joined it myself, but yes, you go on the website. It's all there. You list your expertise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think we invite everyone, right, to go on that website, register, and I'm sure a lot of women will be called once also the conferences starts again and real life starts again. Maybe going a bit more into coming back to your career, were there any moments where you had doubts and difficult moments and just where you were afraid maybe, and how did you overcome it?
What are the challenges that you encounter as a woman?
Lots of challenges, you know, growing up, moving countries several times was a challenge. Learning new languages was a challenge. And professionally as well, there's been many challenges work-wise. Staying online sometimes is a challenge publicly. And also setting up my module, my MSc module, which was a nice challenge, really. I enjoyed that. And, you know, that's the thing about challenges. Some of them really take you to the next level and you enjoy them. And some of them you learn from.
I think you've got to have your your base level and what are your deal breakers. And that would be one of my ones. If you don't feel respected at some point, then you're just part of the conversation. You just walk away, or you let them know. don't stick around. I think women are very scared to do that sometimes.
And do you think in that stream of thought, do you think that the European project is a chance for women and gender equality? I mean, we already touched upon this topic a little bit, talking about the Convention of Istanbul. But maybe more on a personal level, do you think you know, younger girls or and younger men benefits from this project?
Yes, I have a lot of faith in the European project, despite what people, you know, there are many intellectual takes on that. But as a project, as an initiative, and the reason for what it started out, you know, to share peace, to share energy is basically why it started, the steel and coal treaty. And energy is vital in any case at the moment. So yes, I definitely think that there is a way to, but that's up to the new generation or people who are now working in it to shape it. It's also healthy to criticize it and to look at it in an objective manner, as you should everything. But as an onus of a project that started to have a, you know, I think it's very important for climate change too to have multilateral policy making, without which it just is defunct. You can't have, you know, isolated policy measures as far as climate change is concerned. You need, and that's why Paris was needed, the agreements, so that you can have coherent policies world over.
So Sadia, do you think Europe is still very important at the moment?
I think Europe is very relevant in terms of multilateralism, the way that it works. Also, you know, when you look at what outcomes it's had as the peace project, I always think of the Good Friday Agreement, which brought, you know, which was substantial in holding peace together. And definitely for the future, we just need to see Europe give women more of the equal rights and opportunities it started out as in terms of policies, and also to factor those into the new Green Deal. The new Green Deal is all being talked about, and it can't just be a buzzword. There have to be instruments to align with the deal so that women are recovering faster from the pandemic going forward.
One last question, Sadia. What are the challenges you feel the youth will face in the post-Brexit era?
Well, Brexit, for sure. Brexit, in a sense, was something that the youth didn't want. I think they see their future pretty much, their identity was pretty much European. It was a, you know, it was a generational vote where a lot of the older people voted for Brexit. And things like the Erasmus program, that's some of the challenges the students face. And climate change, it's going to be huge. And unfortunately, nobody seems to be listening to them at the moment. We need a change in various aspects of education, curriculum. And I think as a generation, the kids now are probably the most informed, and they know what they want. They are pretty savvy with all the social media and information out there. And they want a planet that they can, you know, feel at home with and survive in, and it's not heating up.
Yeah, and moving on to the last part, so you said that you were reading a lot, so I'm sure you have a lot of recommendations to give us. So which book, which podcast, which movie or women inspire you the most?
Okay, so I was reading The Economist recently, and the new one on climate change with John Kerry. That was very interesting. I definitely try and read that. And of course, I read parts of the interview online with Malala on Vogue. So that was very interesting for me. And podcast, I heard your podcast last, in all honesty, with Helena. And that was awesome. So
that's great. And when you were living in Brussels and coming here often, did you have a specific place, a favorite nook that you want to share with us?
Yes, I love Brussels. You know, Bruxelles is amazing. Yeah, I like Flagey, of course, because I lived very near there. And the Ultimatum is a good meeting place. It's very quick to get to. And it's not as crazy as Place Luxembourg, which is convenient, but is really buzzing, which actually now you miss when you don't see it. And it's like almost a ghost town when I last was there. So, you know, there's a lot we took for granted that COVID made us realize. But yes, I like Ultimatum. And then there are some really lovely little, I mean, the Belgian food, the food is just amazing. And there's some lovely little restaurants just around Saint-Gilles.
That's a good address. That we like it too, the Ultimatum. Great. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sadia. It was great to have you.
Thank you, girl. Thank you. And yes, lovely to speak to you.
Thank you for listening to Heroine. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have not done it yet, please share, rate and comment this episode. It is a great way to show your support so we can bring on even more inspiring women. You can also follow us on our Instagram account, Heroine, with a dot after the EU. We will also be delighted to hear from you. You can write us an email to heroine.podcast@gmail.com. See you soon!